we welcome you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. I am Dan Canobio. He is Chris Algieri. We are ready to roll after a weird, wild weekend. Ronnie Jerez is here as well. He's got a camera on him, so that means something big is planned. We'll get to the weekend of fights. We saw all sorts of fights, all shapes and sizes. We saw middleweights. We saw Australia fights with Tim Zhu. We saw misfit fights that kind of took over the sporting world. And also at the end of the program, we will talk to Ronnie, who watched Rocky II. So this is like one of the biggest shows in the history of this program. What's up, Chris?
Yo, what's going on, guys? I'm very happy that Ronnie is joining the space with us today. For you listeners who don't watch us, We got Ronnie Jerez's face on there now.
There he is.
Pretty boy in the group.
Say something.
I'm usually the voice of God.
Yeah.
You know, just no face, but I had to make an appearance.
Yeah, time. those of you...
Today God has a face.
Yeah, that's correct. Those of you who have watched the earlier days of this show, Ronnie had his own little square in the bottom right.
Yeah.
But then he got too busy. Like, I can see him editing something else right now.
But then also,
it
I didn't have
our show.
Back then, I also didn't have much input.
Well, now you know.
But now I kind of know a little bit more. So then, like, you know.
Now you know about Janabek.
You're a year into your boxing journey now.
Dude, yeah. Like I know about Janabek and Eubanks of the world.
Okay, wow.
Come on.
Better than us. What is your favorite fighter since been following for a year now?
I mean, there's a lot. I really liked Errol Spence.
Yeah.
When we went, Errol Spence is my guy. I mean,
you still can like him.
I still can.
Very likable guy.
The luster isn't there as much.
I thought you were gonna say Teofimo because we went to the fight.
Teofimo's a dog, man.
Teofimo's a dog. Yeah, he might be coming back early next year against Ryan Garcia.
Yep.
Inoue.
I mean, I'm the biggest Inoue fan.
You are a huge Inoue fan. He's fighting.
We know that about Jerez.
Need him in the States.
Inoue's coming back December 26th. So. A lot to get to.
That's a good fight.
Yeah, that's on our list here. Let's start with what we saw over the weekend, Chris, and that was some middleweight action. Janabek steamrolls Vincenzo Galtieri, who might be the worst champ in the history of boxing. Like, how did this guy get a belt? He put up zero resistance. He did nothing. Janabek at times looked like he was toying with him. Could have went for a knockout, which is frustrating. He did get the stoppage, but he could have had like a sensational stoppage, I feel like. But Janabek wins another belt. He is undisputed at middleweight. The division we know is a joke, but let's take a deeper look at it and try to find like some solutions here and try to find some positives. But Janabek steamrolls Galtieri over on ESPN.
Yeah, I like Janabek, and I've called a lot of his fights. I've actually called a lot of his early fights on undercards for Top Rank, and I was really impressed. I liked what I saw. I didn't really like what I saw the other night. He did what he was supposed to do with what he had in front of him. Gualtieri, it might be an understatement that he's the worst in history. Like he almost definitely is. I mean, he brought nothing to the table. And he didn't even try. So, but listen, Janabek did what he was supposed to do with that kind of guy. But they're making the comparisons with Triple G.
Stop.
The only comparison there is for Triple G and Janabek is that they're Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
That's it, Kazakhstan. Kazakhstani, excuse me.
Nice. Got it.
Say that three times fast. But absolutely beyond that, nothing. Listen, you put Gualtieri in with Triple G right now, he goes two rounds.
Have you seen some of the pictures of Triple G? That they're trying to shame him. He's like retired.
So first of all, the pictures, you can't see anything. He's wearing like kind of like a baggy shirt.
Yeah.
He's always had kind of a big midsection, even when he has abs. So like, I don't know where they're getting the idea that he's like this big fat guy now.
Well, even if he is, just let him live. I mean, the guy dedicated a third of his life to boxing, and he maybe put on a few pounds when he's been inactive. Come on. But yeah, I agree. Like, I think Triple G would piece up Galtieri. What the heck was that? But back to Janabek. I would have liked to have seen him step on the gas pedal a little more. Like, you already have this, like, fake boogeyman narrative that Top Rank and ESPN is pushing. If you want to get the audience engaged, you want to get the attention of the boxing world and let you know that you are the best middleweight among not the greatest competition, get a spectacular stoppage. He would land one punch back out. You know, he was toying with the guy. Get a big stoppage.
He fought off his back foot. He needed to stay in the pocket and beat that guy down. The guy had seven knockouts anyway. It wasn't like he was a puncher. So why not take that time? He's predicting, he said in his interview, this is Janabek, I am quoting him, "I want a highlight reel knockout of the year type shot."
Okay.
How are you going to do that fighting off the back foot, dude?
Right.
With a guy who's not throwing punches at you. So change it up. Go forward. Pin him on the ropes. The guy put himself on the ropes half the night. So, you know, unload on him. Stay in the pocket. Don't jump back so much. I don't know. Again, I am high on Janovic, but I did not like what I saw on Saturday. I thought he kind of did a lot more for him, who's making a case that he's the boogeyman. He's the guy. I'm taking the Triple G route. It certainly didn't look like it to me.
The Triple G route is not the greatest route. It's like, all right, 35 years old, finally get your big fight with Canelo. I you're right. The only similarities are their home country, not really their fighting style. Triple G stalked, he prayed, and he knocked you out.
But also, Triple G was super likable. Remember, he had the Mexican style and blah, blah,
even
blah,
if it was fake.
Yeah, it was totally, whatever. He was likable and he smiled and like people liked him. But yeah, this guy's not the same thing. He's going with all Kazakh style. It's like, okay, we don't care about that here. So, you know, you gotta stand out. You gotta build your brand. And like I said, that performance is not going to do you any favors here for the American public.
Well, he did pick up another belt. So he has two of the middleweight titles. One of them came from an elevated title. The other came from beating Gualtieri. So he hasn't really been collecting them in an impressive fashion. He's kind of like the only guy, and he has top rank behind him at middleweight. But I want to put together, I did put together a top five at middleweight. This is like, you know, sincere. Like, I'm really trying to put together five names here because it's very easy to make jokes about the division. Yeah,
five names.
I really sat down and was like, really, like, all right, that's enough with the jokes. And yeah, it's a barren wasteland and all that. It's not your dad's middleweight division. But Janovic number one. See if you agree with me. Adame's number two, which is just saying a lot. Three, Eubank Jr. Four, Lara. And I have Charlo in there at five out of respect, despite that he hasn't fought in 3 years. Anyone I'm missing?
I definitely agree. I definitely agree with one and two. You had Alunkaluli and Adames, right? Number two?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Adames is a very, very dangerous guy. So yeah, and then you had Eubank, Lara,
Charlo,
and Charlo. I'm not putting Charlo in. He's been out of the ring too long for me.
Right.
And I don't know if he's ever going to come back. And if he does, if he's going to come back at 60, so I can't rank him there. I'm going to rank my guy Derevchenko. He's going to be my number five.
Always reliable. Always
reliable,
there. Fight everybody.
Tough as hell. To get into the top five, you got to get past Derevchenko. Like he holds a good place at that number five. Even now. Lara is similar, very, very similar. The two of them are kind of similar type guys now, except obviously Lara's been a multiple time world champion and Derevchenko hasn't. But at this point, it's like if you're going to get into the top and be a guy who's going to vie for titles, you got to be able to get past Lara. And that's not an easy task. Neither one of those guys are easy, Lara or Derevchenko. And then, yeah, Chris Eubank did look damn good against Liam Smith. So, yeah, that third spot does make sense. But yeah, absolutely. I got definitely got. My one and two, it's the same as yours.
Yeah, I think it's Janovic, Adames, and then the rest of the pack is so you got to just, you know, figure out 3, 4, 5 or kind of slop together some names. But, you know, even the 1-2, I mean, we just talked about Janovic and we're not super high on some of his techniques or what he's doing in there. You know, it seems like he's getting that push from ESPN in top rank. So he is what he is, Janovic. I think he's the best guy in a bad division. Adames is a career 154 pounder, but he's seizing a moment. You know, he's seeing that middleweight is kind of barren. I'm going to jump up there. He's got a few good wins his last couple fights. Eubank was knocked out just a few months ago and has spent his last few months. He did get the eventual loss against Smith. But since then, he's been calling out Canelo at 168. You got a guy at 160 who doesn't even want to be at 160 in Eubank. And then Lara has had one fight every year since 2019. One fight a year. And his last one was in 2022 against Gary O'Sullivan, who was beyond washed. So Lara's not really a serious guy. And you have Charlo, who hasn't fought in 3 years, who I think could be the X factor here, but there's so many ifs with Charlo. I know he's back. He's with Ronnie Shields. He's with Roy Jones Jr. He was in Vegas. We saw him there. He was looking not really great. You know, like he's got a lot of problems. We know about Charlo and his mental health problems. He's gave an interview and he laid them all out, but he says he will be returning and he's supposedly returning against Benavidez's brother, Jose Benavidez, by the end of this year. I think it might be on that Benavidez card against Andrade. But Charlo,
that's coming up pretty quick. That's November 25th.
That's okay, supposedly the rumor. Charlo is fighting again this year against Jose Benavidez.
I'd be surprised.
Junior.
That's soon.
Yeah, I mean,
we saw him in Vegas. He didn't look great.
He didn't. Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised about anything with Charlo, but he is the WBC champion still. Somehow, he's an American fighter with a name. He could fight Janovec in the unification. And he could fight Adames.
Hey, listen, let's not forget about Jermell Charlo. He might not go all the way back down to 54. He might see how weak this division is and be like, hey, let me go pick my middleweight title. My brother ain't doing shit. Let me come back here. I don't want to go all the way down to 54. I got to pick up a middleweight title. So, and then he becomes a major player. If Jermell were to not go all the way down to 54 and then stop off in the middle at 160, yeah, with the group of guys that we're talking about, yeah, he's a major player in there.
That's what the division is. It's like, all right, if a couple guys from 154 move up, like Tim Zhu, which we're gonna get to next, like if he goes to middleweight, then it's interesting. Or Charlo goes to middleweight. But here's the thing, like, why you're going up to a division that there aren't any big names or money fights. Like, so why are you going there just to be the king?
Titles.
Just to be the king of a weak division, or are you going to go and find where the big fights are? Like, Charlo shouldn't go to 160. He should go to 154 and fight Zhu.
Well, so being the king of a weak division, Bernard Hopkins made his career on that. He was the king of the middleweight division at the time when it wasn't particularly strong. There wasn't really any names, and he capitalized on it afterwards by fighting the names and you know, moving up and finally getting those guys. Like same thing here. Trinidad moved up. And he got the, you know, he moved up from 47 to 54 to 60. And now you got to fight for these titles. And then that's what really made Bernard's career go to new heights was that Trinidad fight. And it was a guy coming up, you know? So controlling a weaker division is not a bad idea.
Right.
I mean, there's legacy to being a world champion. Once a world champion, always a world champion. A unified champion is a big deal. We're seeing more and more of it. And yeah, hold that division until one of those names comes along. I mean, this is boxing careers are marathons, not sprints.
They could do that. There's guys like Elijah Garcia, Ammo Williams are some younger names that were thrown around to me.
I like Ammo a lot.
Yeah, those are guys that could rise up pretty fast, pretty quickly in the middleweight division. We brought up Tim Zhu. He also fought this weekend. Did you stay awake for that one? Because it was 1 a.m. East Coast when they were getting in the ring. I was working CompuBox for that, so I had to be up and alert. I thought Zhu looked good. Did you watch?
I did too. Yeah, I watched. I think I fell asleep around 7 or 8, and then I finished it on Sunday morning. It was late because I was watching the ESPN fights prior. But I like Tim Zhu. I like him for a lot of reasons. I like the way that he fights. I like his mentality. I like how mean he is. I like his interviews. I like his interview style. He says all the right things. He's like, he wants to fight the baddest guys around. I love that. And I thought he put on a very workmanlike performance. He is a very tough, methodical, efficient pressure fighter. And he's got good technique. He's physically strong. He changes up speed really well. He's got quick hands, man. I interviewed Tony Harrison a couple weeks ago, and he said the number one thing that surprised him about fighting Tim Zhu was how fast his hands were.
Right.
He didn't expect that. And I think we saw some of that the other night with Mendoza. But listen, I'm tipping my hat to Mendoza.
Jeez.
That kid
guy
is tough,
oh
dude.
Oh, my God.
Tough. What a chin. Very durable. Fantastic conditioning. The only reason he saw the end of that fight was because he was in such good condition. And obviously, he has a great chin. He's very durable. But he was just slippery enough, just herky-jerky enough to make Zhu a little bit hesitant when he caught him on the ropes. And I think that's the reason he survived. But good on Mendoza, dude. Yeah. He put on a hell of a performance.
I took my parlay hit this week. I took Janovec by stoppage, and I took Zhu to go to the decision. And I was like, okay, this is going to be tough because Zhu should be able to, on paper, be able to take out Mendoza. Mendoza's never been knocked out before in a fight. You saw that. You saw why. I think his stock rose in a loss. He showed you how you can, you know, lose a fight and still want to get back into the picture at 154 and still stick around. I don't know how he took some of those shots. I think it was the eighth or ninth round. Hellacious punishment. I actually thought Zhu was losing the first through five. I had Mendoza up 3-2. It was mostly because Zhu just was kind of like, you know, I hate to use the term, downloading data. Yeah, downloading the data, figuring it out. And then he just trusts his power so much, Zhu. And that's the big thing, is that he has this devastating power. It was so fluid. A big diversity of punches too, uppercuts, you know, hooks.
Yep.
Everything off the jab
too. He loops the right hand too. He doesn't just throw it straight. He's got a very good choppy left hand and a right hand, excuse me. And he did that really well on the inside with Mendoza when he caught him with a good shot. And he hurt him, and so he closed the distance. And he has that nice chopping right hook on from the backhand, which is hard to do. It's hard to find the range on a shot like that. And he does that really well.
Yeah, he's the guy that was also bringing up Golovkin. You know, I want to move to the States. I want all my fights, my remaining fights in my career, to be in Las Vegas or big fights.
Love that answer.
Right. I'm
Love
with the PBC. Answer. I'm 28, 29 years old. It's time for the fight that we all want to see. Charlo versus Zhu at 154. Charlo is clearly the best fighter at 154. Zhu, every single fight is getting better at that weight. Make that fight next year, put it in Vegas, and get that going. But if Zhu doesn't get that, he's a guy that can move up to 160. You know, he's a guy that could contend for middleweight titles there. I think the future is very bright for Tim Zhu. I think he's won over a lot of naysayers who were there just maybe even a year ago against Gaucher when he was down in round one. He's just fought contender after contender, the right guys at the right time. So I think Charlo is more than ready. It's like, marinated isn't even the right word. That fight is in peril of never happening, and then it being a what if. But that fight should happen. Charlo and Zhu.
Yeah, I am very pessimistic about that fight ever happening, ever coming off. But why would you think optimistic. That? I think there's a lot of things that need to happen. You know, going up two weight classes is no joke. Going right. backwards on the scale at 33 years old is no joke. And I love, again, I told you, I like the things that Tim Zhu says. He goes, Charlo's going to be on a honeymoon for the next year spending that money. And that's the only way. He's not going to be back for a while. So he's not waiting around for Charlo. I love that. He's like, yeah, he's going to go for the next baddest dude. I think we might see a Lubin Zhu fight.
I love that fight.
Lubin, I think that fight makes a lot of
sense. Even though I don't know if Lubin won against Ramos.
Correct, but it doesn't matter. He got the win. You know, his box rec, his federal record has a win
over
Ramos. And that's going to push him forward, and that fight could make a lot of sense. And then, yeah, I mean, there's some other guys in division, but that fight, I think, based off of that move, that if I'm Lubin's people, I'm pushing for that right away.
Yeah, I saw someone put that in there. They should make an all 154 card. There's still Brian Mendoza, like put him in there with Jesus Ramos, put him in there with anyone.
That fight makes sense.
Lubin has reestablished himself. Even if you didn't think he won, I thought he looked really solid, and he could put himself right in there. Zhu is now the elevated WBO champ. He's the full champ. So you got Zhu, Mendoza. Fundora's got to get back into the mix. Get him back in there. You know, he was winning that fight against Mendoza until he got caught. Jesus Ramos, Israel Madrimov, Charles Conwell, who just never going to get a big fight, I feel like, but he's very, very good. So 154, 160, we never really talk about it on this show, but this weekend, you know, we had to because it was what was happening in boxing this weekend. I still think there's some fun fights. It's very easy to criticize the weight class, which everyone kind of does, and just kind of that's middleweight I'm talking about. But they kind of intertwine right now, 154 and 160, because I do agree that Charlo might be out for a while, and he's the main guy at 154, but Zhu can fill that void. Janabek at 160. Some names in there, some fun names. So that's that. Let's move on. Misfits, Chris. I know you were locked in on Saturday to the Misfits boxing.
No, I didn't get the chance to watch
the tag team boxing.
I don't even know what that is.
Bob Canobio, president of CompuBox, fan of tag team boxing. He was locked.
Explain to me the rule set of tag team boxing.
You're asking the wrong guy. It's 2-on-2. It's just like WWE. 2-on-2, tag them in. If you're getting hurt, you can run over and tag someone in. So when you were fighting Ruslan Provodnikov, and he hits you with that shot, your eye blows up. Instead of taking a knee, you run over and you tag in your guy. And
I was confused. I thought that they would do it in between rounds.
No.
Like they would fight a round. It's like, oh, I got good momentum. I'll stay. And then, or it's like, oh, okay, I'm really tired. You go in now. But they literally do it during the round.
During the round, the action. Bro. During the round.
That's insanity. That must have been bedlam. That couldn't have.
It is bedlam. Okay, here's my main thing. I feel like every time there's a big influencer event, this is the biggest one of them all. This Prime card was the biggest influencer event in the history of their genre of boxing. Constantly asked about. I'm sure you are asked about it as well. If you were tuning in Saturday to watch technical high class boxing, you're an idiot. If you were tuning in for entertainment, if you were tuning
in, no one's pretending right. This is high class boxing.
Right. If you were tuning in to for entertainment, you're tuning in to laugh. You were tuning in to be like, oh my God, I can't believe what I'm watching. You got, you probably got your money's worth. Whether it was Dylan Danis and the Logan Paul fight, ending in a disqualification.
How much did it cost, by the way?
I think it was 50 here, 55. But that's on top of your DAZN subscription.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Although I think there was ways, like on PPV.com, our friends were offering it without a subscription. Because they are the best in the biz.
That's a nice little workaround. I like that.
Yeah.
PPV.com coming through once again.
You don't need a subscription. Yeah, so if you were tuning in for like, oh, I want to watch some high class boxing, you didn't have a good time. If you were tuning in for Bedlam tag team boxing, Salt Poppy got knocked out. There were some comebacks. I'm sorry, Ronnie. But the main thing, or the main takeaway, or the biggest fight on that card was the Logan Paul Dylan Danis. We knew about that. We knew about the lead up. We knew how personal it got. Logan Paul was suing Danis because Danis was posting pictures of Logan Paul's fiance, Nina Agdal. So they get in the ring, and it's just like the worst fight I think I've ever seen. Like, Danis just shelled up the whole time, Chris. He literally threw, I think at one point, I think he threw 40 punches in six rounds. He shelled up, and he allowed Logan Paul to kind of tee off, but Logan Paul couldn't figure out how to properly attack a guy that is using earmuffs. So he was just blasting his arms, blasting the gloves. A few of them got through, and then a full-out melee occurs because Danis tried to guillotine him.
I saw that. I did see the ending. Sorry, go ahead. But
weight class, I think they were just under 200. I think under.
Dylan Danis is not that big of a guy, right?
No, Logan Paul is huge.
Yeah, he's a the Paul brothers are really big dudes. I don't know if people at home know that they're really big guys. I mean, I think everyone thinks Logan is like a really, obviously he's big. He's a pro wrestler now, and super jacked. But like Jake's really big too. They're totally different body types, but those are big humans.
Yeah, they were big.
They fight such small guys.
It was a weird fight. Like, I think the influencer boxing scene kind of got a taste of what a lot of boxing fans have been seeing and feeling for years now. That's a big time pay per view that doesn't live up to the hype, where you're kind of questioning why did you just spend $50. But my guy Fred Beck from Fred Talks Fighting, he is a big time journalist, media guy on the scene over.
Fred's the man.
You know Fred? Everyone knows Fred. Everyone. He's like 18, 19 years old. I wanted to ask him. I said, Fred, was the hardcore influencer boxing audience happy with that pay-per-view? He said, as a whole, I thought it delivered. Salt Poppy versus Slim, Dean versus Walid were excellent fights, as well as the tag team match. The main event was rather cagey, which was dampened by the robbery of KSI. Oh, he's a big KSI guy. Logan Paul did his job of performing, but Dylan didn't really show up. It was great to see the fight being 50-50 matchup and each fight being worthy of a main event. Normal boxing, only the main event is good, so it was misfits, good energy. I agree with him there that it was full at the beginning of the night and like raucous for the first pay-per-view fight, for that tag team fight.
That's so a good sign for them.
There is a mixed bag. Like, I think this is the end of misfits or the end of influencer boxing? No, because I think it did over a million pay-per-view buys and it was on SportsCenter. It was everywhere. But do I think like this is the first maybe crack in it where they're like, okay, if these fights don't actually deliver, then, you know, people may not have buyer's remorse and they may not buy them. Ronnie, did you follow along? I know, because it kind of like, I saw ESPN was posting about it, House of Highlights, stuff like that. And obviously, the end of that fight with an all-out melee and just like a takedown and all that. Dylan Danis tried to take him down, couldn't take him down. Tried to get him a guillotine, couldn't do that. He swung at a security guard and missed.
Logan can really wrestle. Like, and I'm talking about pro wrestling. Like, he can, I saw him wrestle with, I think, Paulo Costa from UFC. And it was like high level chain wrestling. So Logan Paul is a great athlete, terrible boxer, great athlete, good wrestler. So Dylan Danis trying to take him down and failing is not surprising to me.
I think Dylan Danis held the biggest L in the history of combat sports.
Really?
Well, when you talk as much shit as that kid talks and never fights and never backs it up and can't back it up, yeah, you're going to take big L's.
Dude, he didn't. He barely, I think he landed less than 20 punches. He tried to do a takedown and got stuffed. That's supposed to be his game. He tried to do a standing guillotine and got stuffed. But swang on a security guard, missed.
But who was he before this fight?
That's a good question. He's a jiu-jitsu guy.
That security guard punch, because I only saw the melee because it was on everything. That security guard punch looked like it was in slow motion, but everything else was in real speed behind it. I was like, is this a slow-mo video? No, that's just how slow this guy is. Holy cow. Watch that thing again and watch how slow that overhand punch is. The security guard doesn't even blink.
No.
The punch is coming at him. He's like, all right, that's really slow and it's way too short.
I think he had a pretty good opportunity to, if he put on a decent showing, he could have came back for more. This could have been his thing. Like, he could have milked this for like 3 or 4 more paydays. I don't think he'll ever be asked back because he didn't do anything.
No, Dan, they'll use him. He's going to troll his way into another fight. He's going to spend
this
money.
That's what I mean.
He's gonna come back.
It's starting to see a little crack in the foundation if they bring him back on the Misfits.
He was a nobody that just, like you just said, trolled his way there.
Yes.
Like, but I don't think he was going to get any fame from this.
Well, he gained 1 million followers.
Well yeah, but that's like,
well, he got all the fame from talking trash about
his wife,
Logan's
fiance. It's like WWE storylines.
That's insane.
But he didn't do anything.
I can do it. Like, right. I can troll my way into like fighting Logan Paul one day.
And he didn't do anything. He didn't like sell out. He went in there to not get knocked out. And his formula was, all right, I'm going to go in there, not get knocked out, and then I'm going to try my MMA moves. And he was going to hope that they worked. And he was going to say, look, I'm not even a boxing guy, and this guy could knock me out, and I put him in a guillotine.
And I had him. Yeah. I could have taken his head off. Because that's basically what Nate Diaz did, right? He's like, I killed you in the second round. It's like, dude, all right, it's a boxing match. Cool. Like,
yeah, that was that.
And then Dylan Dennis tried to do that route too, and you like you said, he failed.
Right, and the main event was Tommy Fury and KSI, and I thought the Logan Paul fight was bad. That was the worst fight I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever.
He said, bad? I felt that Logan Paul.
They were like, hold my beer. Bad. I'm going to go even lower.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are terrible. Watch this.
Yes, watch this. Really it bad. Was KSI doing some weird, like, he does like a, he jumps at, it's like a star. Like, you know that technique? I don't know if they would even teach him.
Oh, I think that's like a street move.
Yeah, he was like doing this and he was jumping at him and they were holding and Fury is horrible. All three Fury brothers, even the dad was like, he stinks. Shane Fury was like, Tommy did not look good. Tyson Fury didn't say anything at all. He's just, his face said it all. His dad's like, could have went either way. Tommy Fury beats KSI and like says he's done.
Could have gone either way with a YouTuber. Insane.
Yeah. Tommy Fury is a YouTuber. That's another thing. Like, stop saying like, I'm going to end YouTube boxing because that ends you.
I got asked about that. Like, well, what do you think about, you know, do you think that Tommy Fury is going to fight, you know, other real boxers now? I'm like, what do you mean other real? He's not a real boxer.
No, he's not.
He's an influencer boxer. He's not a real boxer. Stop.
This is
the
his
guy
level.
Was on reality shows and like on the dating bachelor shows. Like, he wants to be famous. He doesn't care about being a world champion. He just want to fight real.
No,
guys.
I he's found his lane and it's good for him. You can make some money and that's what he is. But you know, that's it. That he's not a real boxer. And afterwards, he's like, I'm done with the YouTubers. I'm going to go on to more traditional route. Like his traditional route, like people forget.
Reality TV?
No.
Go reality TV.
Even if his traditional boxing route, people forget that he was fighting on like those Queensberry Friday night cards and he wasn't even the main event on those. You know, so his traditional, you don't go backwards. You don't go from that event, which was a million pay-per-view event. You're the main event. You're the lead guy. You don't go backwards to small hall shows, Queensberry promotions.
It's the only lane he fits in. Is this influencer boxing thing? Like you said, you better hope that you don't end YouTube boxing because that's where you belong.
Yeah, that would be bad for him. It was an interesting weekend. Afternoon in the States, you know, a lot of boxing fans, or at least on my feed, were tuned in, and they had a lot to say. But I think the ultimate takeaway was like, all right, finally, you could see that a lot of these big pay per views. Very rarely live up to the hype, and you might have had a little bit of buyer's remorse. Do I think it's going to stop these fights from happening again? Absolutely not. They printed money that night. There was 21,000 people there. The gate is going to be huge. The pay-per-view is going to be over 1 million. They're talking about it on every major platform, SportsCenter, all that. So it ain't going anywhere.
Who watches these fights? Like, who's it for?
It's for the influencer crowd.
It's their fans?
It's there. It's the followers of the guy, like fighters. Salt Poppy followers, yeah. Dean the Great. Yeah. I don't even like.
It's the guy. It's the fans who sit there and watch Salt Poppy play video games. That's one. Yes. It's those I guess. People. And there's a lot of those people. There's a lot of those.
No, and I think there's things that boxing can take from it. Like boxing, obviously nothing in the ring and all that stuff was a joke. But in terms of building a fighter's following, mm-hmm. like if you're a fighter out there and you're a legit guy. Like an Ammo Williams or someone coming up, like put out, like hire a videographer and like get people to care about you, get people to care about your personal story. So eventually they just keep following you, but it's hard to do both, right? Chris, you would attest to this.
Yeah, but it's so cringy though. That's very cringy. The issue. It's like,
what's the ultimate goal though? Make money.
The goal is to make money, sure. But like, listen, you have a legacy. I don't know. I'm old school. I got a legacy. I want to be known for what I'm known for. I don't want to be the cringe guy. I don't want to be that. I don't know.
Not all of it's cringe.
To be that. Listen, money's great, but like, I got a legacy. I'm very proud of everything I've done. I don't know. It'd be tough for me. I sleep well at night. Let me put it that way. I sleep very well at night with what I've done in the sport and what people think of me as. And if I was one of those guys who was, you know, had a camera crew chasing them around all the time, I don't know.
Some of it's cringy.
I wouldn't be able to look myself in a mirror the same way.
No, I hear you. A lot of fighters have the same thoughts as you. They want to just focus on boxing. They don't let their promoter promote and let me fight.
I also don't want my entire life on social media. I don't want everyone to know what I'm doing all the time. I don't want people to know where I am.
That's generations. Different generations.
Very different generation. I'm not that way. I am the opposite. I would rather be rich than famous. You know, now kids want to be famous. And well, before, you know, money becomes later, but they'd rather be famous. Yeah. They want to be celebrities before they make money, which is crazy to me. But,
I'm trying to think of a fighter today that kind of blends it together. Probably Ryan Garcia.
I was just going to say Ryan.
But even he put out over the weekend and he's tired of social media. He's like, I used to think social media first, then boxing. But now I'm the opposite. Now you want to win a world title. But
maybe
Mark Castro does a good job too. I think he's got a pretty strong social media following and he could really fight. He trains hard.
Haney too. Haney's got over a million on Instagram and Tank. But they're not putting out daily like vlogs and stuff. They're not streaming. They're like, you know, they're
well, I love Tank because Tank doesn't you don't know nothing. What's going on in his personal life at all. I love that. He just shows up when it's time to fight. He's like, all right, I'm back in on fight week, and then goes and knocks somebody out.
Well, he's a freak. He just has an insane following no matter what he does. No matter what we post about him, goes crazy. Like, people have such an interest in him. So I think he's the rare exception where he doesn't have to do anything.
The thing about him is, what I take from him is when I see his interviews and any kind of dealings, like, he's a genuine dude.
Yeah.
And he's very honest. He's very raw. He seems very respectable, too. He's just, you know, he's an interesting guy. I mean, and then he's got his out of the ring troubles, which everyone always loves to hear about and talk about. So there's always that.
That's his promotion.
That is his promotion. But that was this weekend over on the Misfits, not going away. I was on Reddit. I was looking around for some topics, and I found a pretty interesting question before we get to our Rocky review. This one's for you, Chris. What's the best and most effective boxing style of all time, and why? This guy loved B-ball style. What do you think is the most effective boxing style in the history of boxing?
I always like the Cuban style of boxing.
Interesting.
You know, defense first. I always like that style.
What is the Cuban style?
Cuban style.
Very difficult style to beat. It's a lot of defense, a lot of countering. Not a ton of punches, but score, win, move on. Don't get hit. Don't take damage. I think for the first few years of Cuban school of boxing, they don't even teach punches. Everything's defense. There's a bunch of defensive maneuvers. It's just like everything's defense, 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 defense. Don't get hit. Don't get hit. Don't get hit. Hit and don't be hit is what the sport really is. Yeah. And it's honestly, I mean, it's a low energy style too, so it can last for 12 rounds or 15 rounds.
I think of is Rigondeaux,
man.
Ruined it.
I remember him. I was in the room when he beat Nonito Donaire.
Yeah, is that Radio City? I was there.
I remember being terrified and being like, guys can fight like that. Like, they can be that good. His balance, his coordination, his ability to make Donaire miss. And Donaire is a killer puncher. And for him to just load up on shots, and because Rigondeaux can punch too. I mean, he really loads up on his shots, but he's able to do that because his balance and his defense are that good.
Yeah.
He'll load up with that left hand and throw that thing from everywhere. and very, very tricky, dangerous guy. But yeah, that's I think the most effective style, because listen, if you can't hit a guy, you can't win.
Yeah, but if you don't, I'm looking at like what the judges are favoring these days, and it's aggression and it's pressure, even if they're not landing. The Cuban style is very effective, and I think I was learning from Bob Santos, who's a trainer now of Morel, the trainer of other big Cuban guys. And I was at an MVP show, and he was telling me that we are trying to get rid of the stigma around the Cuban style that you just brought about, that Cuban style of defense first, kind of like, in lack of better terms, kind of stinking it out and getting a 12-round decision. He's trying to get rid of that. He's trying to teach more front foot, you know, teach both. You know, a mixture of the Cuban style, who we're seeing from Morel, who's a very good defensive fighter, but is a lot more aggressive than Rigondeaux, a lot more aggressive than Lara.
I heard that Morel, even in the amateurs, was very much professional and very aggressive.
Well, that's because there's been a philosophy change. That's something that Paulie was telling me, too, that they changed the way Olympics are scored. They changed the way the amateurs are scored, where they're not just going by, you know, the fencing way of scoring it. They're they're looking for professional, the way professionals are scored or judged, I should say, and that's being more offensive minded. Some other styles out there, though. There's obviously Mayweather style, which is hit and don't get hit. It's kind of like the Cuban style. There's
the problem with the Mayweather style is you got to be Floyd Mayweather. Everyone who's tried it doesn't do it the way he does it. I brought this up talking to people before, and they're like, oh wow, if you look at Floyd's dimensions in terms of his body, he's got a very short torso. He's got very long arms. He's 5'7". He's got a 73-inch reach. Very, very long arms. So that shoulder up, his elbow is down to his hip. My elbow's not down to my hip. My arms aren't that long. I have a long torso. I have long arms, but I have a long torso.
Right.
So, but for him, he has such a short torso. He's a very high belly button, and he has long arms. That elbow's already – he's got that shoulder up to his chin, but his elbow's already down to his hip. There's nowhere to hit. So guys, I remember Andre Berto was fighting out of that style when he fought. I forgot who he fought. He just took a beating because his arms are too short. You can't do this. He's got these big bulky arms, and yeah, that's good for blocking. But then also you got body shots on both sides. You don't have the reactions he has. And so yeah, the Mayweather style is you got to be Mayweather. And I don't even consider that a style.
Consider like Tiafoe?
Everyone's like, oh, the Floyd Mayweather style. You know.
What would you consider Tiafoe's style? Because I feel like it's low output. He does have an emphasis on defense. He doesn't really jab, but he throws a lot of power.
He's an athlete. He fights like an athlete. He's very, very athletic. His ability to change direction and change weight, and his balance and his power, his timing, his ability to judge distance. He's just a super athlete. You've seen the kid throw football and catch a football. Like he's an athletic guy.
He's a specimen.
And yeah. I look at a guy like Amo Williams, similar to him. He's just a very athletic guy, and he carries over. Because Amo doesn't even have that much boxing experience, but he is a tremendous physical talent.
Yeah, a lot of these answers. It's an interesting thread. Marvin Hagler, someone responded with traditional boxing style, throwing shots the way you're taught in the gym. Then he added switch hitting late into his game. Lennox Lewis was the boxer that had all the stats maxed out. I bet trainers dream of a guy like him joining the gym. Bud Crawford, switch hitting, like another guy, like his style is Bud Crawford. Like you got to be Bud Crawford to have that style.
Bud's an alien. But it's all, you can't even. That's not you can't. You can't Pacquiao. You can't mimic Pacquiao's style. You can't mimic Bud's style. You got to be Bud. Bud made his own style. He's his own guy. You can't be like that.
Yeah.
Switching styles. I mean, switching stances.
Ronnie's thinking of something.
It's not taught, because it's almost impossible to master.
What, you have something?
No, I was just thinking, like, I mean, I guess to be great, you have to be unique.
Yes. That's why they say styles make fights in boxing, because there isn't one specific style that every fighter uses or to be the most boring sport in the world.
That's the most beautiful thing about this sport. Yes. You've got Willie Pep, you've got Sugar Ray Leonard, and you got Mike Tyson. You got three different guys, three different body types, three different skill sets in terms of their physical attributes. All of them great fighters. All of them will go down in history as great fighters. All of them world champions. All of them have their own style. They found a way. That's the beautiful thing about boxing. This is not a 20 or 40 yard dash. There is no perfect way to get there. You know, with a 40 yard dash, you have very little time to make a mistake. Everything has to be literally perfect, and you just practice that. Plus, you have to have obviously the physicality. But boxing's not like that. Willie Pep wasn't fast. Willie Pep wasn't strong. Willie Pep was just good. He found what worked for him. He had great endurance. Mike Tyson, you know, obviously we know what Mike is.
With the
peek-a-boo. Then you got Sugar, who's more in the middle. Sugar's the, like, I think, like, the perfect boxer puncher.
Mm.
Like, he's just, he had very good boxing skills, offense, defense, great jab, right hands, left hooks, like, everything fundamentally sound. And then he just had a dog in him too. He had a good chin. He had a dog. He had a killer instinct. That's another very distinct style about the boxer puncher.
It's a great question by Barry on Reddit, and there really is no answer. A lot of the answers are jab.
This is a barbershop debate for till
it depends
the
on what you like. You know, that's why judging and so that's why the sport is so subjective. That's why judging is so subjective, because there's judges out there that have a criteria. You know, it's effective aggression, it's clean punching, it's defense. Mm-hmm. But then, like, in the what creeps into their mind is what they think is the best way to fight, and what they think is it very rarely go by the four criterias. And they just start to. What I've noticed, though, trends is that judges really go for the aggressor. If you are moving forward and you're not landing, and the guy is landing off his back foot, but it doesn't, he's not giving the impression that he's trying to win the fight, they'll always go for the aggressor.
The eye test.
Yes.
Yeah. I hate that. I mean, it made me change my style in my
fighter. Fighters, like, you know, judges, with your style.
I knew the judges weren't seeing what I was doing. There's so many nuanced things that are going on. And I didn't have the name like a Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins was able to extend his career because he changed his style up. He was much more of a boxer puncher coming up. And then he became really tricky and fleet-footed and very, very nuanced in terms of his... he didn't throw a lot of punches at the end of his career, but he did a lot of things in the ring. A lot of feints, a lot of step, a lot of footwork, a lot of things. Those are all things that I did throughout my career. And I'm like, judges aren't seeing this. They're not seeing how much work I'm doing each and every round. They're only seeing that I'm not coming forward and that I'm landing jabs from the outside and countering guys and keeping them from getting anywhere near me or being able to hit me. And it made me, I mean, I had to change my style because I was gonna lose these fights.
Adapt or die.
The reason I brought up that the Cuban style, because I think defense is everything. And if you always look, the top of the pound-for-pound lists are always guys with great defense.
Yep.
Defense, defense, defense. The old saying, defense, offense wins games, defense wins championships. It's very true in boxing. And if you want to have a long career, defense matters. So for me, a style that is defensive, look at Shakur Stevenson. Why am I so high on Shakur Stevenson?
Yeah.
The guy does not get hit. The guy does not get hit.
It's the most sustainable thing. It's the most sustainable trait.
You can't beat a ghost.
Yep.
I agree. Can't beat a ghost.
It's the most sustainable trait you can have is the defense. It can take you to the top. It can keep you in the sport. It can make for fun fights. But you put Stevenson in with a clone of himself, not really exciting fight. You put Stevenson in there with a Tank Davis, a seek and destroy guy. Then you got yourself a fight. That's why styles make fights. That's why there isn't just one most effective style ever, but there are some good. It's like personal preference. It's whatever you enjoy.
Also,
Chris,
defense is the most difficult thing to be good at.
Yeah, because it's almost innate, right?
You got a major league pitcher who's standing 18 inches away from you throwing fastballs, and you got to make a miss.
and you don't got a bat. You got your
and
face.
You don't got a bat.
Just got your you face.
Got your face. The money maker. Final. I like that segment. Funny, and final segment. Why Ronnie is on camera? It's the Rocky review. We waited 1 year. In between Rocky movies.
No, it hasn't been a year.
At least. I think we did it in November or October of last year. We did Rocky 1 after a much long anticipated time off.
Yeah.
Rocky 2.
And from what I remember, Ronnie was not a big fan of Rocky.
Yeah. No.
So take us through it. Rocky 1, you said, would you give it 2-pack of ass?
Dude, I honestly don't even remember. Did I even give a rating? I don't even know.
No, but you weren't that great high on it.
I wasn't that high on it, but also I'm not the same man that I was
when
I watched Rocky 1.
So you're almost like Rocky.
We're seeing growth here.
You're almost like Rocky in Rocky 2.
I see myself in Rocky.
I'm dialed in.
Right, Rocky 2, I enjoyed a lot more, first and foremost. I loved the continuation that the end of Rocky 1 was the start of Rocky 2.
Right, there was no time off.
There was no time off. There wasn't 3 months later. It was just boom. Adrian, where's Adrian? You know? That was awesome. And then them kind of talking crap right after. We're like, oh, you know, there ain't going to be more rematch. We're like, I'll fight you right now in the wheelchairs.
Right.
That was cool.
Right.
But then after that, there was a long stretch without boxing that I noticed. And it was more of he got the money and spent it all.
Got the bag.
Got that cool tiger jacket, which I saw. I was like, that's a great Halloween costume. I bet you it's been done so many times before.
Yeah.
But the fedora tilted with the black,
mm-hmm.
the black tiger jacket. That was pretty cool. And then him, you know, making ends meet. That was cool, whatever. We saw a lot more of a softer Rocky. Got married, had a kid.
Right.
Spoilers, obviously. Adrian gets into the coma. And he's crying by her bedside.
Tough scene.
Bedside. While he's trying
The movie's 40 years old. I don't think spoilers really matter.
Spoiler alert. who are we talking about here? Rocky?
And then all this is happening as he's trying to get back to fight Creed. And it's like, how is he going to do it? His head wasn't in it from the start until she said, go win. I saw that coming.
They played that at Yankee Stadium before a big rally.
Really?
Yeah.
Go win?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, wow. I never even noticed that.
They have a whole montage where the Yankees are down by one and going into the ninth, and they end it with, go win.
Wow. Look, now I know.
Yeah.
But the fight, one thing about the fight that I just don't understand is Rocky got so many punches in the face. He just didn't have his hands up.
Defense wins championships, not for Rocky.
Dude, he was just taking jabs, just like, bop, 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 bop.
Yo, Adrian. Bop.
Yo, so I'm glad you brought that up. I actually went, during COVID, I went and counted all the Rocky fights, CompuBox. That's how bored I was. And it blew up.
That's awesome.
It blew up. It made our server crash on the CompuBox website. So many, Max Kellerman retweeted it. It went everywhere. Creed outlanded Balboa 61-7 in the first round, 26-0 to open the fight.
Dude.
61-7.
He was just wearing
61
fights.
Punches in the first round.
61. Creed outlanded Balboa 92-37 over the first two rounds. Rocky landed 5 punches after the first knockdown. Obviously, then Rocky, he finds himself back in it. But what you're all talking about, Chris, you would know this better than anyone as a fighter. It's like you got to know like the side of the human side of Rocky. You also like that story is as old as time. Like fighter wins fight, gets a lot of money, loses all his money, has to get fight
loses
again.
Loses all the fame.
Loses all the fame. Has to. Only thing he has left is fighting to get
he
back.
He has to reprove himself.
Only, thing they know. You got to go back to it. It's the pugilist paradox.
Yep.
My favorite part was the race on the ropes to get back up. That was beautiful. I mean, that's one way to do it. He could have easily, like, just made it a knockdown at the end of Apollo. But the fact that they both went down and they're both like 5, 6, and they're both just trying to get to the top of the rope. Has that ever happened in boxing?
No. The closest thing I ever saw to Rocky. No. The closest thing I ever saw to Rocky was Mick Conlon versus Lee Wood. When he knocked him down the first round, like they were going back and forth, and then Lee Wood had a crazy comeback and then knocked Conlon out of the ring, and he fell into his dad's arms. Like that's the closest thing we'll get to a real life Rocky.
That's almost biblical.
It was
or
something
any
like
Arturo Gatti fight.
Any Arturo Gatti fight. But in terms of like the stuff you see in the ring has never happened like in Rocky fights. That's probably the part about it that I think most boxing fans are like, they kind of look past that.
Mm-hmm.
What they gravitate to is the storylines. Right. Like what we just talked about, the, you know, down and out Rocky. He had a whole career before Rocky won. He was like a journeyman.
Yeah.
He had like 12 losses and then he somehow finds a way to.
Little known fact that the heavyweight champion of the world, Rocky Balboa, had 12 losses before
Chuck Webner. Getting the that's the real fight. Rocky.
Chuck Webner.
That's what you got to watch next. Is the
Bayonne
Bleeder.
Right?
Yeah. The Bayonne. They did the real Rocky. There's a guy
Bayonne,
out there.
Bayonne, New Jersey?
Yeah. There's a guy out there named Chuck Webner who was the inspiration behind Rocky. And Rocky watched one of his fights and then wrote Rocky. And then Webner found out about it and was like, what the hell? Give me my money. And Rocky was like, no, it's not really you. He was like just lying to the guys. Clearly him.
What?
The guy was like blood and guts, Jersey fighter, down and out. He was like a salesman in between. He was selling like liquor or something. And finally they let him in. They gave him a cut, but nothing near what he actually deserves. Like we're talking about $1 billion franchise.
Did Webner have a big fight?
He fought Ali.
What?
Yeah. He fought Ali and went the distance.
That pretty much is the Apollo Creed. That is the Apollo.
Apollo is Ali.
Wow.
Chuck Webner. Exactly. Yeah, it's on. It's a 30 for 30. It's called The Real Rocky. And then Showtime made a whole show with our guy Liev Schreiber plays Chuck Webner because he went to prison.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
It's called I think it was Chuck. It's called Chuck. Yeah, he went to prison for all sorts of crimes and stuff. It's wild, but Rocky 2 you like.
I like. And it made me like Rocky 1 more.
Okay, so yes, now
that's what they do. That's what they do. The movies, because they're sequential and because they build, you get a better understanding of the prior movies when you go on.
So Rocky III is when I think things get haywire. I think that's when it turns into less of the stuff that you don't like, with like the character development and like very little boxing, to it just being like a character. It just turns into like, it's Americanized.
Well, okay.
It turns into what we're seeing with Misfits. Like we've you know, Hulk Hogan's in it.
Mr.
You know?
T. Thunder Lips. Don't want to give away too much.
It becomes more of a blockbuster.
Yeah. Then after three, they're just chasing something insane after that. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
They're chasing the dragon. They're just chasing the dragon.
Yeah, they got so far away from what it originally was that, like, all right, now we have to make it bigger. We have to make it bigger. We have to make it crazier. We have to find even crazier opponents.
The montages have to be longer and more intense.
It's the classic. I mean, it's like Fast and Furious. And first, it was like all about racing. Now, Fast and Furious sends like aliens, or they're in space or something like that.
But the thing, Creed, I feel like I like Creed because it kind of went back to basics.
Okay.
The original Creed goes back to basics.
I can't wait to get to the Creed part.
You got to get through some hairy moments with the Rocky. Like three, 4, 5 is good. There's a Rocky.
We almost got shut down after one. What do you mean? We're in trouble, Dan.
Yeah, he didn't want. What do you mean?
We almost got shut down after he watched the first one.
Right.
This whole run that we're doing, we almost got shut down after the first one. It took a year for him to watch number two.
No, but I'm back.
You're back, and they're on Netflix.
All right,
and they're on Netflix.
Is three on there?
No, I saw two on YouTube. It was free on YouTube.
Wow.
I got to watch 3. I haven't seen 3 in such a long
time. I kind of like gloss over 3. 3, I feel like, is the one no one really like takes seriously, because 4 was so good.
Mm.
4 is amazing.
It was the calm before the storm.
4 is Drago.
I've heard of Drago. That's the Russian, you know, buzz cut. He's like a machine.
He's a machine. He is.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
It's Dolph Lundgren, and Dolph Lundgren's awesome.
Yeah.
That's the guy who plays
Dolph Lundgren, the actor.
All right. That's our show. Rocky 2, thumbs up from Ronnie. A weird and wacky show this week. We'll be back next week with even more weird and wild stuff in the world of boxing. Chris, any final remarks?
No, this is a fun show. We shot from the hip. We always say, like, we don't have that much news to talk about. That's when we talk the most. That's
right.
That's when we have the most fun.
Debate about Cuban style of boxing and what wins. I love that.
And Misfits.
All right, everybody. We'll be back next week. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.